Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness, produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen. There's nothing like salt to bring out the flavor in foods. And if you've had to cut back on salt for health reasons, you know how bland mealtimes can be. Suppose you discovered everything you thought about salt was wrong, that you can and should eat more of it, and that cutting back on salt may actually be causing you harm.
It appears that the tide may be turning on salt consumption, and riding the curve of that wave is our next guest, a groundbreaking researcher who has compiled his findings in a new book, The Salt Fix: Why the Experts Got It All Wrong and Why Eating More Might Save Your Life. Dr. James D. Nicolantonio is a leading cardiovascular research scientist and doctor of pharmacy at St. Luke's Mid-America Heart Institute, who overturns conventional thinking about salt. He argues that salt can actually help you improve sports performance, crush sugar cravings, and stave off common chronic illnesses. He joins us from his office in Kansas City, Missouri.
Welcome to Take Care. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Right there in the title, you don't hold back. The title is The Salt Fix: Why Experts Got It All Wrong and Why Eating More Might Save Your Life. It's a big thing to say that the experts got it all wrong. And you state right off the bat that there was never any sound scientific evidence to support the idea that consuming salt increases blood pressure. A huge, huge upheaval of everything we've believed up till now. So can you explain that to us?
Yeah, so 80% of people with normal blood pressure actually don't get a reduction in blood pressure when they cut their salt intake. And even if people do get a reduction in blood pressure, it's not necessarily a good thing. It's akin to telling people to only consume one cup of water per day. Basically, when you consume a low-salt diet, you're just dehydrating yourself. And we know that because the heart rate almost always goes up when people cut their salt intake.
So what are the studies that people have drawn on that have given us the wrong impression of salt consumption?
So in the book, basically I reveal how it was just based on expert opinion back 40 years ago. And it's just what ended up happening is that low salt dogma went into the 1977 dietary goals, became our dietary guidelines, and that low salt dogma has carried over every 5 years ever since. No one's ever actually asked, did we even have any evidence to recommend low salt diet?
There are experts in the field of hypertension that still do not agree with you. They believe that salt intake does increase blood pressure. Earlier, you said 80% of people that have normal blood pressure don't see a reduction with salt reduction. But what about those listeners who have been told by their physicians they have high blood pressure and they may be even taking medication for it? Should they also reduce their salt and not worry about consequences?
Yeah, so the body actually controls salt intake. And so if you're craving salt, that's generally an indication that you're deficient in salt. So I've actually had three family members, two of them with high blood pressure, who were put on low salt diets and wound up in the hospital with low sodium levels in the blood and severe dehydration. So when you tell someone to consciously restrict their salt intake, you're going against their own internal drive. And because our bodies control our salt intake, we should listen to those salt cravings.
One thing I think that would be helpful at this point is to have you explain what role salt plays in the body so we will understand what happens when we increase or decrease salt.
Yeah, so everybody's always focused on blood pressure. But when you cut your salt intake, none of the experts have ever actually said, well, here's the bad stuff that happens, right? So that's what my book reveals. Basically, what ends up happening when you cut your salt intake is you become insulin resistant and you get an elevation in the fat-storing hormone insulin, so it can increase the risk of prediabetes, diabetes, and obesity. When you cut your salt intake, it increases all the stress hormones, noradrenaline and adrenaline, all the artery-stiffening hormones, which are called angiotensin II, aldosterone, renin. And it also, when you cut your salt intake, it increases the risk of potentially having cognitive impairment because sodium is required to bring vitamin C into the brain and into the bone. So this is an essential mineral. We should never have demonized salt.
Is there a difference in the types of salt, because they've never been more popular than they are now in terms of the variety? What is it in salt when we're talking about studies that you've researched? What is that salt made of? And is it just regular old table salt, iodized, sea salt? And does it matter in the equation that you're describing?
Most people don't understand. In regular table salt, there is added sugar in it. They add dextrose. There's anti-caking agents. They bleach the salt white. and it's susceptible to high heat, and so it is a very highly processed salt. And also, even some of the gourmet sea salts are from modern-day oceans with modern-day pollution, and some of them have been tested with microplastics. So the one salt that is incredibly pure and has very high amounts of other minerals is called Ancient Lakes Magnesium-Infused Salt. It's got good amounts of iodine, and it's from an ancient lake, so it doesn't have the pollution from modern-day oceans.
You have mentioned in your book that across cultures, across ages and stages, if you allow people unfettered consumption of salt, they will, across the board, average about the same. In other words, people don't overeat salt in the way they might overeat something like, let's say, sugar. What is it that you found that people eat? How much do they consume?
Most people consume about 8 to 10 grams of salt. The interesting thing is we've actually consumed up to 10 times more than that for the last 10,000 years when we used salt as our main food preservative. And so what actually ended up happening is when we invented the refrigerator, salt intake actually went down at the same time where all chronic diseases started to increase. So we've never actually even seen that a high intake in salt has ever paralleled any type of rise of chronic disease. In fact, in the book, I show it's the exact opposite.
Is there an optimal range of salt consumption? And I know you're talking about grams, but can you also give that in teaspoons?
Yeah, so all the studies show that between 1 1/3 teaspoon to even up to 2 2/3 teaspoons of salt per day seems to be where people are at the lowest risk of heart disease, strokes, and early death. So that is higher than what every single guideline tells us to consume. They all tell us to consume less than a teaspoon of salt. But what's interesting, you can lose more than a teaspoon of salt consuming just 4 cups of coffee. You can lose that because coffee flushes salt out in the urine. And you can lose more than a teaspoon of salt in just 1 hour of exercise through sweat. The low-salt advice never had two legs to stand on.
What does salt have to do with coffee and other beverages that have caffeine?
So basically, it's a little complex, but caffeine inhibits something called adenosine, which prevents your kidneys from reabsorbing salt. So you end up spilling salt in the urine when you consume caffeine. And so almost every single American adult consumes some type of caffeine substance. And so this is relevant to almost everybody. And also, most people are, if you're in the heat, not even exercising, you can lose about a half a teaspoon of salt every hour. But if you're exercising in the heat, you can lose over a full teaspoon of salt every hour.
If you, let's say, have 3 cups of coffee to start out your day, does that mean you can up the amount of salt you have later? Or should you let your body be the guide? And let's say you crave something salty, not try to inhibit that. And is that your body's way of letting you know that, yes, in fact, you do need more salt?
100% correct. So if you consume more caffeine, you're going to need more salt. If you exercise more, you're going to need more salt. And so you need to let your body tell you when you actually need salt. There was a case study in the 1940s published in JAMA, the most prestigious medical journal. And actually what ended up happening, this little toddler was over-consuming salt. The parents were so worried, they ended up hospitalizing him. And the doctors saw that he was raiding the cabinets for salt. And they actually strapped this poor child down in the bed because they thought he was addicted to salt. He ended up having salt-wasting kidney disease, and he ended up passing away because they wouldn't let him consume salt. So this tells you that your body controls salt intake, and we should be listening to salt cravings. And if we don't, that can lead to hospitalizations and potentially things, very, you know, harmful things to our health.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness, produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
And our guest today is Dr. James D. Nicolantonio, a new book called The Salt Fix, Why the Experts Got It All Wrong and Why Eating More Might Save Your Life. You are an athlete, and you always have been, and you have a practice of actually consuming either garlic salt or a teaspoon of salt followed by water before you exercise. Would you explain how that works for you?
Yeah, so I know how long I'm going to exercise before I do it. I normally work out for about an hour, and I know how intense my workouts are. So I know that the average person is going to lose about a half a teaspoon of salt per hour of exercise. Now, if it's hotter out, if it's 90-degree weather or hotter, most people are probably going to lose about a teaspoon or even more. Some people, if they're playing soccer in hot temperatures, they can actually lose up to 3 teaspoons of salt in just 1 hour of soccer practice. So what I end up doing is absolutely, some people can tolerate dosing themselves with salt dry and then washing it down with water. Some people kind of like creating like a lemon-lime type of Gatorade without the sugar. So you can use lemon juice and lime juice and You put maybe a quarter or half a teaspoon of salt, and you fill it up 8 ounces. It's 16 ounces, and there's a sugar-free lemon-lime natural Gatorade, and it's going to replace the salt, not only that you're going to lose for that hour, but salt has so many beneficial properties to exercise. It vasodilates the arteries. It increases blood circulation, so it increases blood flow to your muscles, and it reduces the risk of muscle cramping and aches and dizziness and fatigue. And overtraining syndrome, which so many athletes suffer from, is actually due to salt depletion in the tissues. And so they have joint pains, and they don't understand what's going on in their body. It's because they're slowly sweating out all the salt in their body, and they're not replacing it because they're only consuming water or they're consuming sports drinks, which are about one quarter the amount of saltiness as your sweat. So you're never getting that adequate amount of salt back. Even when you consume salty sports drinks, it's not enough to match the salt loss in your sweat.
For people that don't sweat, some people get very hot and they may turn really red like a tomato, but they're not big sweaters. Are they still losing salt?
Absolutely still losing salt. And what's interesting is if those people consume more salt, they probably would increase their sweat production.
As a doctor of pharmacy, you have seen a lot of people come through who have a lot of medications. And a lot of times those medications are prescribed for conditions that could be controlled with diet. So that this makes me ask, what have we seen in terms of the health of the American public since the implementation of don't have salt, don't eat salt, low salt diet, all this emphasis on low salt? What conditions have really erupted that could have possibly been controlled better?
Such a great question. So the unintended consequences of focusing on the wrong white crystal salt is that we gave sugar a free pass. So what ended up happening is we put out all these processed junk food, labeled it low in salt, and people thought it was healthy. And so they're feeding their kids these processed foods that are low in salt because they think it's healthy for them. And the problem is when you take out salt, you not only take out flavor. When you do that, you have to add more added sugars and artificial sweeteners to now provide this bland food with something sweet. So now you're putting a much worse white crystal in the food. So that's one consequence. The other consequences we talked about. Salt intake is controlled by our body. So if we need 8 to 10 grams of salt, or let's say we need 2 teaspoons of salt per day, and we're eating a low-salt food, we're going to end up eating 2 to 3 times more of those low-salt potato chips to get the salt your body demands. So low-salt foods may actually increase overeating and overconsumption of refined carbs and sugar and lead to prediabetes, diabetes, and obesity. But the other unintended consequence is salt is our most natural food preservative. So when you put out all these low-salt foods, you're increasing the risk of foodborne illness. You're reducing the expiration date substantially, so you're increasing food wastage. So there's all these unintended consequences. It's like we fear salt so much that we'd rather have some artificial preservative in there as long as we can label it low-salt. So we really got to change the food and the nutrition labels and stop bolding and focusing on salt. It's an essential micronutrient.
A follow-up on that, there's been a tremendous industry that boast low-salt alternatives, like low-sodium canned broth, and a lot of canned foods we're told to stay away from. Are you saying that we now don't have to worry about that? Like, what's the best way to get our salt, and is there any salt we should avoid?
So the best way to get your salt is to eat real food and salt to taste, and maybe, you know, ancient magnesium salt to taste. And so, really, you don't want to consume processed foods. That's not how you want to get your salt. That's the problem with the United States, is that 80% of our salt comes from processed foods. Whereas if you look at some of the longest-living populations, Japan, South Korea, even the Mediterranean diet, very high in salt. But they get it from real food. They get it from seafood, right? Lobster, crab, clams. I mean, just 7 ounces of clams can give you a full teaspoon of salt. And so, and they also ferment their vegetables in salt. So if you can eat real food and add the good salts to that food, you're going to wind up eating more of those bitter, healthy greens, nuts, seeds that you never would have eaten. And I honestly see this with my own children. They would never eat their spinach or nuts or seeds without salt added to it. And so their health and whole dietary pattern is significantly improved with salt. And really, that's the whole point of my book, is salt is your key to eating healthy and to exercising. And what is better than that than a natural substance that your own body controls its intake?
That was an eye-opener for me in your book to read that salt cuts bitterness and that people can then eat bitter food because salt is added. But I should probably ask the one important question. Are there certain medical conditions that should those individuals should follow a low salt diet? What are they, and who should not increase their salt intake?
First, I'd like to counter that and say, well, low sodium levels in the blood is the most common electrolyte abnormality in both people living outside the hospital and inside the hospital. Very few people have high sodium levels in their blood. So we need to understand that most people are at risk of low sodium, not high sodium. And that's because the kidneys will just get rid of any extra they don't need. There are certain conditions where you may over-retain salt, but it's not the salt that's the problem. It's what's causing you to over-retain it. And in the book, I go over all these underlying disease states. And one thing is insulin resistance and high insulin levels, which cause you to over-retain salt. And that is driven by a diet high in refined carbs and sugar. So most people can cut out the refined carbs and sugar and fix their quote-unquote salt-sensitive high blood pressure. So what I always go back to is don't blame the salt for what the sugar did.
So you don't want any further disclaimer in terms of medical conditions. I understand what you're saying about the underlying medical conditions, but for people listening right now, it might be a good idea to consult their doctor as well so they really have a clear understanding of what their medical condition is or what medications they are taking before they make any drastic changes to the diet. Would you agree?
Yeah, of course. We can't give medical advice, right? Or nutritional advice. But what I'm saying is most medications actually cause people to become deficient in salt. They don't cause the opposite. And so I go in the book and I show all these common medications, right, like diuretics, and a lot of blood pressure medications deplete us of salt and can put people in a hospital for low sodium levels in the blood. And there are some conditions where, again, you over-retain salt. If you have Cushing syndrome, which is high elevation in cortisol, and if you have aldosteronism, which is some people have a aldosterone-secreting benign tumor where they have high aldosterone levels, which cause them to over-retain salt. We have medications to treat that. And so why would you inhibit someone from using the most natural substance to make their food taste good? And I can tell you, so many people are like, thank gosh, I can finally taste my food again. And because so many people are suffering, because salt is flavor, and to deny someone salt, again, can be potentially very dangerous.
The book is The Salt Fix, Why the Experts Got It All Wrong and Why Eating More Might Save Your Life. And the author is our guest today, Dr. James D. Nicolantonio, a leading cardiovascular research scientist and doctor of pharmacy at St. Luke's Mid-America Heart Institute. Thank you so much for sharing your findings on salt with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks, ladies.